Welcome to Season 4 of the official podcast of Crossing the Divide, a multimedia exploration of life in the Intermountain West. Crossing the Divide counters a media culture fixated on urbanism and elevates a region defined by open space, sweeping vistas, big skies, and natural wonder. Season 4 brings a new feature, The Daily Direct, shining a spotlight on the important work of local journalism as an antidote to the troubling trend of disinformation. This new monthly feature, in addition to the existing Crossing the Divide podcast series, takes you behind the scenes at the Daily Sentinel with exclusive access to the journalists and decision makers who deliver your daily news as they navigate an industry adapting to a digital age. The second installment of the Daily Direct, Newsroom 101, features a conversation with managing editor and unintentional Renaissance man, Dale Schrull. In addition to diving into the details of his fascinating and diverse work history, Dale and I trace the journey from news tip to full-fledged story, detailing the differences between the news cycle of a traditional newsroom and the news cycle of unvetted sources that provide immediate access to unverified information. I'm Gretchen Reist, guiding you over the divide and into the diverse terrain of the American West. Dale Schrull, welcome to Crossing the Divide, The Daily Direct.
Happy to be here.
Now, you are the managing editor here at the Daily Sentinel. But before we delve into what the responsibilities of a managing editor are, I want to delve a little bit into your work history because it's incredibly diverse. You've done lots of things, and you actually came to journalism a little bit later in life. Now, you are from Newcastle originally.
Yes.
Now, you wrote a book about your hometown. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's a book on the history of Newcastle, Colorado, which is has a very rich history of coal mining and a little bit of railroad history and things like that. And so growing up in Newcastle, there is a kind of a burned scar on the Hogback Mountains right beside the town. And that was just kind of a fascination for anyone who lived in Newcastle. And so we all knew about the coal mining history through just townspeople talking about it and things like that. And so it was always fascinating to me that there wasn't really a history that had been written about the town. And so once I started getting into the research, it just became more and more fascinating. And I decided that it just needed to be, kind of that story needed to be told and let people know that the people that come to town as new residents, they will now be aware of this fascinating history that just nobody really knew about that came to town later. But as a Newcastle native, I always heard about it from all the townspeople and things like that. I was also intrigued by the coal mining in my own past. My grandfather was killed in a coal mining accident actually before I was born in the Carbondale area. And so when I was out of high school, not sure what I wanted to do, I went to work in the coal mines outside of Redstone. The company was called Midcon and Resources, and it was 1980, and so many of my friends worked in the coal mine, and it was kind of one of those coveted jobs, so to speak. It paid well. There was a macho part of that appeal, and so working in a coal mine was a fascinating kind of chapter in my life. During that time, Mid-Continent Resources had a coal mine explosion that killed 15 people. And it kind of obviously opens your eyes to this isn't a safe career path. People are, in danger. Looking back on it, it was just one of those eye-opening experiences that made me realize I needed to kind of maybe go in a different way with my career path. And so that's kind of what was behind me writing that book at the time.
Now, what is the title of the book and where can we find it?
Legend of the Burning Mountain. It's available. Amazon, I think, has some copies, but mainly through me is about the best place to find that book at this point.
All right. So look Dale up here at the Daily Sentinel if you want to get your hands on that book. It sounds really interesting.
It was a fun project. It really was.
Now, I did want to touch briefly. Like I said, your work history is varied. There's lots of stuff in there. You were a pizza delivery guy for a while.
I was.
And you had some harrowing experiences.
Yeah. So I moved to Denver. I was always trying to figure out a path to kind of go back to college after I started in high school and didn't finish it. And so I moved to Denver and finally got going in kind of that college path to put me on my career path. But I needed a way to kind of make money, enough money to sustain myself and still have time to go to school and things. So I became a pizza delivery driver. And there were a couple of times, three times in all, where I was robbed twice at gunpoint and once just a threatening person that said he would hurt me. So it's an interesting situation when someone points a gun at you. And so it's especially over a pizza and, I don't know, $25.
I bet that shortened the pizza delivery career as well.
Well, I jokingly, somewhat jokingly, tell people it's the best job I've ever had. You know, it made a lot of money. I didn't have to work real hard, and it was full of adventure.
Yeah, obviously. All right, so let's bring you to today. Your work here as a managing editor. What is the responsibility of a managing editor at a newspaper?
It has so many different aspects. Managing people, and from reporters to photographers to the people that build the pages. So there's a lot of managing the staff and making sure they're on track to do their job. And those duties kind of are just always a daily situation. Everyone here at the Sentinel is very competent, and so they know their job, but there's always something new that comes up almost daily. And so kind of managing their workload is a big part of that. But just the direction of what goes on a daily basis is it's something new every day because you don't know what to expect. You're trying to work with reporters to make sure that they are kind of working on stories for the next day or for the weekend and things like that. And so there's always planning that goes into that. And then there's the unknown of every day, of a breaking news story, of a story they're working on that has now changed. And so dealing with the people and assigning stories and then making sure that those stories are coming together is all part of that job.
Well, we're here today for an episode that we're going to call Newsroom 101. When Jay and I sat down and talked, we talked a lot about social media and disinformation and how that has kind of disrupted the news industry and the importance of actually vetting information before you put it out to the public. So we're going to trace a potential news item from the time it enters the building until it makes it out to the reader as an official news story. So we'll hopefully come out of this with a comprehensive inside look at the flow of the news cycle. First off, what are the various ways that a potential story reaches the newsroom? How do you find those stories? Do they come to you?
There are a couple of different ways. Number one, people, readers, people in the community, they will send us story ideas, story tips, things like that. And we rely on those people a lot because they have things that are impacting their life. And so they send us those story ideas. All of our reporters have what we call a beat. And that beat will be anything from city government, county government, what we call cops and courts, education, business, And of course, when you talk about sports writers, the sports beat, and then we have arts and entertainment. So those reporters have specific beats that they work. And so let's say, for example, the county government beat, that reporter will tune in or go to the Mesa County County Commissioner meetings and listen to what the commissioners are talking about, what issues they are evaluating, and then we will decide if we want to pursue a story, if a decision was made with that commission, and we'll report it on that way. And it's the beat is where so many of our stories begin, because it gives us that kind of that seedling of the beginning of a news story sometimes. And then we'll start looking into different aspects of a news story and reach out to other sources to kind of move that story along. But it all starts with those reporters being tuned in to those government sources, the law enforcement, things like that. But having people that we reach out to, sometimes just saying, hey, is there anything happening? Is there anything new in this area? And that's where so many of things from a news variety begin.
Now, you've got to put out a paper every day, so that's much different than a blogger or somebody just kind of throwing information out. Do you have a lot of instances where you really think there's a story there, but it takes so long to verify information that it gets stale and then never reaches the paper?
I don't want to say many times, but there are quite a few times where we will maybe get a story tip, and maybe we are pursuing a story and it just kind of falls apart, because we need to make sure, number one, that the story is legitimate, the story can be verified, and the story can be vetted to the point that we have everything we need to put that story out to the public, knowing that all the boxes have been checked. Because otherwise, we put a story out too soon, we're going to hear that something was incomplete, something was incorrect, and we have to start over. Every newspaper puts out stories on occasion too soon. They rush a story out because it's trying to be first, thinking they've got everything ready to go, and it's not quite ready. So that's just part of the process and part of the frustration sometimes, that we need to be so solid in our reporting before we put something out. And sometimes that story may be put together by another news entity sooner than we have it. But what we have to realize is when we have a story out, it's going to be as close to accurate, solid, all those things that we need to have as possible. And sometimes we kind of hold back on a story a little longer than maybe people think we should, but we don't want to put something out and have to correct it and realize that we had something that wasn't complete or accurate.
Now, we live in a place that has a fairly large, I guess, saturation of TV stations for a community this size. Do you see the newsprint media as competing with television, or do you see them more as complementary?
Most of the time, complementary. We have different strengths as media entities. They are going to always do and focus on breaking news stories. That is just kind of tailor-made for their medium, because it's they will get to a crash scene or a fire, and they will have video footage, and they will get that initial report of that story. And I look at our job is to try to follow those breaking news stories, be there when we can, but then add that second or third layer to that story. What was the story that behind this fire? What was the story that the the victims that were impacted by a breaking news story and things like that. So we are always looking at telling a more thorough story, and we can do that with our medium, with the newsprint, with our online product, and kind of with our experience and our reporting staff. And I look at it as we really are going to tell the overall story, not necessarily better, but more thoroughly than televisions can many times.
Given the extensive investigation and vetting of news items that potential stories go through, I have to imagine that the transition from print to more digital forms of publishing have radically changed the news industry. And you've been in it for a number of years, so you've experienced that. Can you give us some insight into the difficulties that a journalist faces in just keeping up with expectations of a constant flow of information? Because, of course, the Daily Sentinel does have a website, so you always kind of have the opportunity of putting it out there.
Yes.
Very quickly.
Well, like I said, we don't want to put a story out before we've thoroughly vetted it and got it as close to perfect as possible, so to speak. But what we do, because of the online product, we will put out a first draft story, so to speak, where we want to get the basic information that we've kind of vetted and made sure is accurate, and we're going to get that online as soon as possible. And then the reporter is going to spend the rest of the day filling out the blanks of that story. So it's kind of changed our workflow to where reporters are many times working on a story that begins in the morning, and we will have that initial report out late morning by noon, and then they're going to continue working on that story throughout the day, where we will then have the completed story out to the public by 5 o'clock. If it's not quite coming together, it may not make it out until the print edition, but the online product has just allowed us to be so much more versatile. We can kind of get that preliminary story out when it's ready, and we'll let people know that there's more to the story and it's coming out when we've got it ready. And it still allows us to not rush the stories out, but allows us to really kind of work on that story throughout the day while we still can let the public know that the story in the preliminary form is ready and we can continue working on it.
How do you feel as a journalist who is bound by certain ethical standards when you hear the term fake news directed at stories that might not fit somebody's narrative of what they believe it to be?
It's the greatest frustration facing this industry today, because the line between commentary and news has been greatly blurred. And what happens with commentary, which has now drifted into the area of propaganda, where if it doesn't fit a reader's opinion or even kind of the narrative that they think it should be following, then therefore they disagree with the story, therefore the story they consider to be wrong, or in the new word fake news, it's difficult to kind of deal with that, because there's, in their minds, there's not an argument against it. They consider it fake news because it doesn't agree with their opinion or their view of a news story. And it's just a battle that is ongoing. It's just so frustrating to kind of explain what we can do about it, I guess.
What do you think is the importance of having that opinion section of the paper that you have, where there is room for more of the commentary?
The newspaper industry for centuries has been a place where readers have gone to have an open dialogue and to have the view of multiple opinions and commentary. And in the past, it really kind of cultivated that open dialogue where people with different opinions could now discuss and have conversations over a subject to where it would kind of create more open-mindedness. And people would still have their opinions, but were still open to an opposition opinion. And it still has a role in today's society where there are going to be varied opinions on many news subjects. But if we don't have a dialogue or we don't listen to both sides, both opinions of certain stories, then we're just not going to have that open-mindedness that really has made this country flourish over the years. And so the opinion page still has a valuable place in the newspaper industry. And for us, from the editorials that we write, we focus on local issues that are going to impact our local readers. And so we find that to be very essential as part of our news coverage.
What role, if any, beyond just the dissemination of news, do you think that local newspapers play within the community, particularly in the wake of an increasingly toxic environment that is circulating around the news cycle and the deep divisions that we see because of that?
As a kind of a small town newspaper person, growing up with that community-minded newspaper belief, the lifeblood of a newspaper is the local content. And some of those stories will always drift into kind of the toxic realm of politics and things of that nature. But what I encourage people to look at newspapers like the Sentinel for those stories that are impactful to the local community. And whether they're feel-good stories, whether they're stories about a community that is facing change with development or traffic issues, and see the value of that newspaper for its information, its valuable information about its neighbors, its communities, its just information they can't get anywhere else. And to me, so much of the toxic attitudes about newspapers come from national stories. And I ask readers to step back and look at us for what we really do best, and that is focusing on local stories and local people. And that is going to be our future, and that's always been our mission, is that local first mentality.
Are there any thoughts that you'd like to leave our listeners with before we close out? Anything that I missed about the news process that we want to get in there for people to understand?
The process is so interesting and kind of fluid. Every day there's something new. And when you pick up the paper, it's, you know, you just look at these local stories that we've done. And I just want people to kind of maybe sit back and appreciate the fact that there was a lot of hours put in and a lot of research on some of these stories and interviews done. And it's not as easy as maybe some people think to put together a news story or a sports story. And there's a lot of work that goes into them. And there's a lot of passion within our newsroom. People that just want to do as good a job as possible and just have a passion for community journalism. And that's what I hope people realize, is we have this community is our main mission to provide information and entertainment and all those other things that we try to do. And we try to do it with a great deal of passion and commitment.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me today, Dale. It's been great chatting with you, and hopefully our listeners have a better idea and appreciation for the hard work that goes into the local paper that goes out every day.
Great. Thanks so much.
That ends another edition of Crossing the Divide. Thanks for tuning in. As always, you can access our full lineup of conversations with Western Voices by searching Crossing the Divide on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and now on Amazon Music and Audible. Hit subscribe to stay plugged in to each new episode. Follow Crossing the Divide on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to keep up on podcast releases and access exclusive video and photography. Crossing the Divide, a voice for the Intermountain West.